welcome to The Squeal, PIC's swine management podcast featuring in-depth conversations on topics that matter to you. PIC is the global leader in swine genetics. At PIC, our goal is to make our customers the most successful pig producers by providing them with the best genetics. We know our business success depends on yours. Today, we're continuing our series on access to nutrition, management ideas for feeding to maximum genetic potential. Our special guest is Ben Harborough, Director of Feed and Nutrition at Iowa Select Farms. PIC's Ilya Zupsov, technical support for the Ukraine, Russia, and parts of Asia. Nat Stass on the Wean to Finish technical service teams, along with nutritionist Wayne Cast. This is part two of a three-part series as we discuss in-barn and on-farm nutrient access.
Ben Harborough, Director of Feed and Nutrition at Iowa Select Farms.
My name is Nat Stass. I'm on the Wean to Finish technical service team.
Ilya Zupsov, and I'm from Russia, and I'm with technical support.
Wayne Cast, and I help PIC with some of their nutrition programs.
So in the feeder, on farm now, what's a recommendation? Talk about what that pan needs to look like on pellets and on mash.
We spend millions of dollars on research trying to figure out what goes in the feeder, and we don't spend very much money on designing a better feeder, which seems kind of crazy. But Nat will tell us, and Ilya will tell us how our best recommendation for feeder adjustment is. Yeah.
So I think it's somewhat important to step back and just understand some of the initial recommendations around, you know, water availability, just linear feeder space. And if we're restricted in any one of those areas, we may be able to easily compensate for, say, in the pan coverage. So if I'm short on floor space or linear feeder space, I may recommend a higher pan coverage according to that. Now, pending that, you know, all those things, you kind of check the boxes and all those things, and we meet recommendations of, say, 7.2 square feet, you got 2 inches of linear feeder space per pig. The feeder hole access is plenty wide enough to support the size that those pigs are getting at. And then you have enough water space, you know, one water source for 10 to 12 pigs. Usually we would start those pigs, say, in a wean to finish situation, somewhere between 60 to 70%. We don't want them to have to work too hard in those first 3 to 5 days to be able to get that feed, since it's a newer environment and they're learning to eat a solid style feed. And then from there, we can start to back that down. So by like a week to 2 weeks, we probably want to be closer to 50%. And then from there, I would say it gets to be more of a company goal in mind, in terms of, do you want to drive average daily gain more, or do you want to drive feed conversion more? And so if I'm working in North Carolina or Pennsylvania, we may recommend closer to, say, 35%, because corn's more expensive, and so we're driving feed conversion a little more. Where, you know, possibly if I'm in central Iowa and corn's pretty reasonably priced, I may still stay at 40 to 50% to try to get a little bit of gain out of that. But is that about what you see in Russia?
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. You know, I just wanted to say that, you know, since in Russia, all farms are fixed time, average daily gain is the driver.
And pigs are really valuitable.
Yes.
Really profitable.
Of course, yeah. I mean, you know, producers get more money for pigs, so they want them to grow faster.
Yeah.
Right? And, yeah, they want to kill at heavier weights. Yep. Like, you know, 10 years ago, we were talking about 105, 110 kilograms. Now we're talking 120, 25, 30, and more. So, yeah, I mean, typically, since average daily gain is the driver, we will work with about 50%, up to 60% sometimes pan coverage.
Yep.
So just to drive the average daily gain. Yeah.
And so do you think if we're a little short on linear inches of feeder space, we can offset that somewhat by more pan coverage? Would you?
Yes.
Yes.
Absolutely. You know, this one farm that I visited, you know, they were so restricted in feeder space and the floor space. So I just told them to go 100% pan coverage.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yes, that
helps.
You're going to accept some feed wastage.
Yes,
but
in this situation, we did accept some feed wastage, but it helped with tail biting as well.
So this is maybe off the subject a little bit, but I don't want to forget it. Ben had a couple of interns work from Iowa State work on feed flow, and there was some, we learned some stuff.
Really, that was working on feed coming out of the boot of the bin, basically. You know, we learned that we can definitely impact it by the deflector shields or the restrictor plates that they put in there, largely for pelleted feed, so that it doesn't put too much demand on that auger from a power standpoint to pull the pellets in. We also found that if you've got a single boot versus a double boot, dual unloaders can also increase flowability. And the other thing really we tried to push for as well is the amount of time that system runs. So we're a lot better off to try to draw as much out of the bin at one time as we can. So what that means is you got to have a lot of capacity in the facility. And so, you know, we've spent, you know, the last few years doing a lot of conversions on feeders to try to get as much capacity into the barn as we can. And, you know, with the goal that even when the pigs are at market size, we can have at least one day's worth of feed usage inside the facility in our feeder capacity. And that allows us not only to be able to, you know, fill those feeders up and know that we're good until the next day, but also when those feed lines run, they can draw out of that bin a big chunk of feed at one time, which ultimately helps move that feed instead of trickling out and then packing in that bin as that feed line turns on and off multiple times within an hour's time frame.
So that there's a proximity switch at the end of your feed line, and on some of them there's an adjustment so you can make it run fewer but longer mm-hmm. times, and the feed will flow better if it runs longer periods of time but fewer rather than and that's what Ben and those engineers learned. And then don't put feed on top of feed. That was another thing we learned, right? So that tandem bins, it seems like an easy concept, but it doesn't get managed very well. So you want this bin clear empty, and then you feed out of the other one. You don't want both those slides open.
As far as capacity goes, you know, I would say we're pretty aggressive with it, but you know, we really want to shoot for, say, a wean to finish or finish your barn upwards of about 7 pounds of capacity per pig. Now, Ben, feel free to comment on it if you'd like, but I'd say not a lot of people hit that mark. But really, it's just kind of a conservative recommendation to try to minimize, you know, out of feed events. So if your bin does bridge up and your grower can't get in there for the next 24 hours, you know, you're going to have a day's worth of feed within each respective mm-hmm. pen.
That's our goal, is to have, you know, at least 7 pounds per head of capacity. You know, I think you're right, especially in situations, you know, like wet dry feeders or tube feeders. You know, it's been very common to, you know, have not even close to that, you know, situation just in the way some of those were designed. I guess, like I said, a few years ago, we made the decision to change out a lot of feeders, and any of the new sites that we're building, we're putting in feeders that have that capacity, with the thought process of the more feed we can have in the barn, the better off we're going to be for a number of reasons. Feed flow, obviously, it helps out as well, but the knowledge, right, that if you know, hey, if we got the feed in the barn and the pig has access to it, the chances of him ever running out of feed are really low, which allows us to, whether it's snowstorms or things like that, maybe power outage issues, I mean, we can go fill up those feeders and know that we're fine, and maybe we just have to have something there to make sure the wells stay running and they have water and some of those things, but that we don't have to run feed systems, you know, multiple times a day to continue to have access to feed.
Yeah, so I do want to make one quick comment just because it kind of read and tied together there a little bit, but, you know, we want to make sure we're separating out wet dry feeders versus tube feeders. They're two different styles. A tube feeder is not necessarily a wet dry feeder. It's a dry feeder with close water access.
Supplemental water, yeah.
There, and so we want to, you know, if we are using tube feeders, which we don't highly encourage or highly recommend at all, we would want to go off dry feeder specs for that.
what I understood you to say, Ben, was that you had switched out feeders because they were lacking capacity, not because they were lacking linear space. And I wonder, with the size changes in the animals, you know, at which point do we need to make those moves?
Yeah, I mean, it was a combination of multiple things. We didn't have as much capacity. You know, we had a large number of tube feeders that had capacity but had feed flow issues getting to the actual pig. The hopper that held the feed had a bottleneck to get down to the tube that caused issues for feed access for the pigs. You know, seasons of the year and different feed mills that we struggled with. You know, we've replaced most all of those, but those are things that, so we could have feed flowing out of the bin just fine, but maybe not coming through the feeder like we would hope, both from, you know, like we discussed, the pellets. A good pellet might plug up where the feeders were set at, just like these tube feeders, it might not flow through the tube feeder itself very well. Other instances is, like Wayne had mentioned, that proc switch is at the end of the feed line, so really the rest of the barn depends on that feeder's, you know, flowability / intake or disappearance. So if that one isn't getting consumed, you know, there's feed in front of them or feeders in front of them that could be out of feed just because that last feeder has feed. So that's where capacity can also be in your favor, is you're less dependent on that last feeder. You know, you're still dependent on to turn the system on, but if you have capacity in front of it, you've got more cushion of error that one's not as highly dependable as it might be in a situation where you have, you know, little or no capacity, like with a tube feeder or a minimal capacity dry or a wet dry feeder.
So to back up a little bit, I just wanted to kind of make a comment on, you know, some of the recommendations around, you know, we understand and we look at it periodically as the feeding behavior of our lines and understanding, you know, how many, to that point, how many visits they, or how many visits throughout a day they go to the feeder, how long do they stand at that feeder and eat. And then, you know, we can start to tie in how we can influence that through having more pan coverage and such. And so, you know, that's where different recommendations come in for, say, dry feeders versus wet dry. You know, we would require, or we'd recommend 2 inches per pig on a dry feeder versus 1.25 or 1.15 inches per pig on a wet dry feeder, because a wet dry feeder pigs can eat faster. And so therefore, they can rotate quicker and they don't necessarily need to step away to gain access to water either. It's kind of a dual purpose type of thing. So I think it's definitely important.
Does management consider that as they go into selection of a line?
Probably not.
Yeah, I would say pretty limited. That being said, I mean, I think a lot of the lines in the industry aren't all that drastically different, at least within region. Mm-hmm. You probably see more differences if you compare, say, Europe to North America, because there's some different lines used in either region. But
good ideas from feeder manufacturers lately? Something that you've seen in the last few years?
You know, I'm a real big proponent. I like, you know, I think wet dry style is pretty good. And granted, you know, we tend to be kind of driving gain and a gain-driven company or focused a lot of times. But I think the shelf wet dry feeders, and I think there's been some various things and innovation in that, where that shelf's adjustable and so pigs can reach it at different levels and you can change your flow rates out of that feeder. And then some of them have experimented with making a narrower shelf, and so that's the feed's more likely to fall into the pan where the water's at. But then they also made a wider shelf where it stays on and it doesn't fall out of the hopper as quickly either, which I don't know if anyone has thoughts on that or which one's better. But
you know, one thing that's hopefully changed is something that you said, and something ties to something that Ilial said was, with these pigs are getting bigger, and so the feeders should have wider holes than they ever had.
Yep.
And also deeper.
Yep.
And if you see a shiny spot war on the front of your feeder, that's a sign that pigs...
Yep. There's not enough
crunching his neck to get in there.
Yeah. You know, speaking about the wet dry feeders, my understanding is, I mean, we have them in Russia as well, but my understanding is that managing the wet dry feeder is slightly harder than you manage the dry feeder, right?
Especially early on is
on wean to finish.
When pigs are younger.
So you know, and that in my world, that goes back to labor and people, and you know, if I can trust my people, you know, and if I really trust my people that they will work with a wet dry feeder the way it's, you know, it's supposed to work, right, then my choice would be wet dry feeder.
And one comment to that, you know, we, as far as feeder hole width, you know, we really want to look at our market weights, but, you know, we probably want at least a minimum of 14-inch wide feeder hole and maybe even considered 15 or 16-inch wide if we're going to, you know, take them up to 320 or more pounds in the future possibly. And then likewise with that, you know, one trick that I've learned with working with a specific producer was, you know, if you're using, say, a shelf wet dry feeder, there's some thought to that, you know, pigs can then either choose if they want to eat wet dry feed or they want to eat that dry feed off that shelf. But if you're going to get the best bang for your buck out of a wet dry feeder, you want them to eat that grill style wet feed. And so if you just walk down a barn and watch pigs eat, you want less than 10% of pigs to have their head up eating off that shelf, and you want 90% of them to have their head down, say, in the pan. I think that's a really good rule of thumb and something that we can objectively measure as we observe activity in those pens.
Ben, have you found it challenging to train people to manage that well, or is it really more a issue of getting them the information, show me a picture, and then follow up to check on them every few days to make sure they're following what you've described?
The biggest, you know, issue that we would have is that transition. So we would start all of our pigs in our wean to finish facility. We would have the water turned off on our wet dry feeders, and then they would have access to water bars is what we call them, but basically they're just four nipples in every pen. You know, when they're 25 to 30, 40 pounds, we would try to transition those pigs to just water at the feeder. And, you know, that would be probably the biggest challenge that we see is, you know, during that transition and how those pigs transition, you know, both from filling the feeder up with feed and, you know, kind of restricting some of the water access maybe at times to the opposite where, you know, their noses get wet and then they restrict the feeder from feed coming out, you know, and managing through that would be the challenge we see. And then, you know, health issues can play a role in that as well. You know, pigs will do different things when, you know, maybe running a fever or something, that they'll play with the feed more and make some more challenges through filling up the pan with feed, or they can get the shelf wet enough that the feed doesn't flow well out of it.
Ben, something that Wayne had said earlier had to do with bamboo rods, and I don't know if that's to encourage your employees to better, more excitement or to move the pigs around, but it has to do something with bamboo rods. What do you know about that?
This goes back to the tube feeder situation where, we have plenty of feed availability above the pig's head where he couldn't access it well, but we were able to, you know, utilize some rods in the tube feeders where the spinner plate would spin that rod and actually agitate the feed up above that was in that hopper system to allow it to keep flowing. An area that we really focused on is, you know, trying to improve with that feeder as feed was, you know, flowing fine into the barn and into the hopper of that feeder, but had challenges coming through that bottleneck going into that tube.
But you got rid of most of those feeders finally, but yeah.
That's the best solution.
Yeah. So the tube, I try to visualize this. So that spinner down at the bottom, so you got the tube up there, and the feed was hanging up clear up here at the top. And so that rod was sticking up in there. And so when that spinner turned, it wiggled the rod and rattled the feed out of there. It's really clever. I don't know if Ben came up with that idea or one of the producers.
So where did you get that, Ben? Who noodled that?
So we had some rods that were some, like, heavy welding rod type material that then would actually connect to the spinner plates. I worked with some guys and we, you know, bought some really their fiberglass fence posts that we put in there to give it a try to see if we could get them to agitate further up and, you know, eliminate that bridge that we're having inside that hopper.
Why we're spending so much time on feed interruptions is it what its effect on performance, you know? United Animal Health and Prairie Systems, they did a study and showed that a feed interruption every 2 weeks, just once out of 14 days, the pigs were 4 pounds lighter at the end of the turn. So this is a big deal.
So, if you don't mind, I got one question kind of on off feed, out of feed events and such. But how, from like a nutritionist perspective, what would be considered an out of feed event? Like, how long does a pig have to go without feed?
On this study, I'll have to look it up to see what they said.
Really, any does some sort of damage, right? And I think that that has a lot to do back to some of the things that we've already discussed on, okay, what's your feeder pan coverage? How many linear inches do you have? What's your square footage of your pigs? Are they at market weight? And so a 5-hour outage on a 50-pound pig that has 2.5 linear inches of wet dry feeder space, right, and all the square footage in the world, it probably doesn't impact very much because they can freely go and get feed once it's available. But that same amount of time frame for a pig that's 300 pounds, haven't taken first cut yet, and you know, you're down to 1 linear inch of feeder space, I mean, those things all are magnified at that point, in my opinion. You know, that might be in the middle of the summer. So now you start talking about what's their temperature, when are the hours of the day they're going to actually go to the feeder and eat, and then are you creating an out-of-feed event during those time frames, you know, become worst case, you know, and the thing just snowballs.
Yep. And I, you know, I'd really want to, because I think about it quite often that I really want to try to drive some research in that area, because I don't think we fully understand. We definitely have data and information about out-of-feed events and their effects, and we know they're not positive. They're definitely negative, no question. But I don't think we have a good idea of how frequently they happen in our industry. You know, I make the argument a matter of, you know, if we consider an out-of-feed event 5 hours, you know, we can define it that way. But what happens if for 3 months there's one single pen that twice a day it runs out for a half hour to an hour?
Yeah.
You know, what happens to that one single pen? Is that then considered an out-of-feed event? And what effect does that have on the closeout of the barn, right? So, but that's something that unless our feed line times out, we get an alert, or we're literally in the barn at the time that feed's out, we don't know
we don't
about
have a
an
clue.
Out-of-feed event.
Yeah. And then I'd not thought of what Ben's saying is that the big feeder space and how fast he can get full again. So we ran him out. In that study, they ran him. They didn't have feed for 24 hours out of 14 days, all right? Yeah. And it cost him 4 pounds. But if you had a lot of feeder space where they could fill up faster, it's not extending that 24 hours to 30 or something by the time the lowest priority pig gets to eat. Yeah.
Right.
I hadn't thought of it that way.
I think it influences your standard deviation within a pen dramatically as well, because the big pig in the pen, or the boss pig, right? I mean, they're going to get to their feed when they want to get to their feed. It's the ones that are on the bottom end of the bell curve that end up suffering the most.
When you decided to move to whatever style you're installing in your facilities today from a tube style feeder, you know, what drove that decision, and, you know, what results did you see, you know, through evaluation, and are you seeing today, say, in terms of probably mostly average daily gain, but any other areas that there was definitely influence?
The first move was really to reduce water wastage, right? So we felt like we could improve that. We felt feed availability to the pig was important. So, you know, the flow issues coming out of tube feeders were a constraint to us. And then the capacity deal, you know, we had a neighbor that had a facility, and I remember I'd chore when he was gone, you know, on vacation, let's say. And first step was you walked into the barn, you flipped the breaker, you know, up, and it turned the feed system on. And as you chored the barn, you know, it filled up these big old hopper feeders inside this barn and big old wooden spindlies or whatever they were. But those pigs never went out without feed, right? And that feed line was It wasn't flex, but it was an old steel. It really came back to how do we minimize feed outage events and maximize the capacity in the feeder so that ultimately step one is make sure the feeders are full before you're done choring. Because if you know they're full, it makes it easier on the guys taking care of the sites. It's one less thing they got to worry about throughout the day or multiple times a day of making sure that feed's flowing. I mean, they can sit there and get a bin started. Hopefully all the time once you get it started, it's going and it's fine, but they don't have to worry about and 3-4 hours later, they need to get there and start it again. So the water wastage deal is a big deal. The feeder capacity, feeder access is a big deal, which all leads to improvement in average daily gain, whether that's through minimizing feed outages or maximizing intake, you know, while the pig's eating.
So what improvement did you see? What percent would you say you saw?
You know, depending on which feeder you're comparing to, and, you know, as a system, I'd say we saw average daily gain move up. You know, water wastage definitely decreased. But, I mean, you're looking at could improve average daily gain 400 or 500. And that would be probably just head-to-head. But then if you take into account the out-of-feed deals, I mean, that's a huge deal, right, depending on how many you're having given decrease in capacity in the barn.
It seems like we on those tube feeders, you had poor feed conversion too, and that was one of the drivers as well. And then, and I'm trying to remember, how did you decide on what kind of feeder to replace it? Was it based on looking at closeouts, or did you put something different in the test barn? I don't remember how you made that decision.
We really got the production guys together looking at feeders. I mean, we had tried different style feeders on, you know, the wet dries and then, you know, different lengths, right? So, you know, what's the right length for the system or the size of pens that we're putting pigs in? A big decision from the production guys was how do we adjust them, right? I mean, at the end of the day, the goal of a feeder is to minimize feed wastage and maximize feed intake. Which feeder do we believe that our system can, you know, accomplish those goals with the minimum amount of effort? Some of the wet dry feeders we had, the adjustments probably weren't the greatest. There was some things that could happen where the shelf would fall and waste a bunch of feed, you know, and was harder to manage that way. We went with a wet dry feeder that has, you know, a fixed height setting because we found that, you know, some of the inserts, I guess, that you put in there to try to drop that shelf caused more issues than we felt gave value. You know, we don't believe that that's a constraint of a wean pig to eat out of the shelf that's fixed. And the reality was, is in order to take those inserts out, you had to run all the feeders without feed. And so you, even the best manager, that becomes not only a hard task to do, but is that the best utilization of his time, his or her time? So we, you know, we went away from those with the inserts.
Any other questions or comments, guys?
I think the only last comment I want to make is just about feeder adjustment. You know, we really, we need to be walking pens every day for various reasons, but just, you know, our rule of thumb is, you know, every day, every pen, every feeder. And so, especially when you're going to different diet phases, but we need to be looking at feeders and adjusting them as needed for sure. And that's probably, you know, you should probably be adjusting probably 10 to 15% of your feeders daily. So we need to make sure we're looking at those.
And then just use our posters, I guess. I mean, they have nice pictures, and you can just place them on the farm, in the barn, on the wall.
Yeah, I think the posters are a great resource for, yeah, you know, slat-level employees, yeah, for, you know, your 40% versus my 40% may be slightly different.
So, yeah,
let's
look
try
at the picture.
Tie those a little closer together.
Yeah.
Joining us on The Squeal today was Ben Harborough with Iowa Select Farms, PIC's Nat Stass, and Ilya Zupsov with Wayne Cast. You're welcome to share these podcasts widely in your organization. In fact, we encourage it. For PIC, the international leader of continuous genetic improvement in swine breeding stock and in world-class technical support to the global pork supply chain, I'm Ned Arthur. Thanks for joining us.